Welcome to In the Money, sponsored by Flyer Financial Technologies, the company that builds cutting-edge technology designed to solve asset and wealth management firms' toughest trading workflows. In this podcast, we help advisors and asset managers understand how technology is transforming the wealth tech sector. We'll cover how to leverage technology for faster, smarter investment decisions, megatrends, and more. Now, on to the show.
Welcome to In the Money. I'm your host, Rusty Summer, and today we're diving into the biggest trends and pressures facing wealth management firms. We're joined by Chip Kispert, a leading consultant from Beacon Strategies, who acts as a bridge between broker-dealers, RIAs, and the technology shaping their future. We're going to cut through the hype on today's hottest topics, from AI and alts to the drivers of real change. Chip, great to have you.
Rusty, happy to be here. It's kind of fun to be on the other side of the microphone.
Yeah, it is. It's fun. So, and that's why we're here. We're focusing in on a pretty key group of people within the industry, and we're supposed to have a little bit of fun and, you know, impart a little bit of knowledge. And well, you do both those things really well. So Chip, let's start here. You're in a really unique position to see what's happening on the ground. Advisors are facing a flood of new tools. What technology is actually breaking through the noise and delivering results right now versus what's just contributing to tech fatigue?
Wow, you just kicked right into the big one right off the bat, didn't you?
Going right at it.
All right. Well, you know, it's interesting. So our perspective is unique given the fact that A, we do consulting, B, we host roundtables, and C, that we're constantly on the phone with folks all day long. You know, when we look at really the tech environment, the tech stack of advisors and larger wealth firms, there are a ton of moving parts, like unbelievable amount of moving parts that these folks who are not technologists at the end of the day have to keep in order, right?
Right, right.
And so one of the things that came through loud and clear this spring at our roundtables were that, you know, these firms are a bit overloaded when it comes to tech. Mm-hmm. They want stuff that works. And they want to plug and play into it. They want to be, if anything, vendor stewards and be able to choose their tech for its ease, for its effectiveness, and for the ability to also grow their businesses and service their customer base. So I think if we're looking at who is making strides in 2025, certainly those firms that are enabling making an advisor's life easier come to mind.
Yep. All right. Well, that makes sense. I think it's always helpful to give people some real world examples. You know, maybe we could get into a little bit of a case study or a little bit of a discussion about tech fatigue versus genuine value. What are some of the real world examples you've got right now?
So I think, you know, one of the things that we're bumping up against, and you know, this is the time of year when we actually go out and we're talking to, you know, I'm spending anywhere from 4 to 6 hours a day getting updates from technology providers, right? Yeah. And so what we're seeing is this unbelievable, you know, what I'll call just kind of sucking sound right now of AI, right?
Right.
And the amount of noise is deafening. Now, the ones that are bringing the value are bringing the use cases, right? So as an example, I spent some time last week with the folks at wealth.com, yeah. Right? What they're using AI for is amazing. How they're using AI. They're taking a largely manual process. And they're streamlining that process and to make estate planning a lot easier for advisors overall. So to me, that's a giant use case there. We're starting to see compliance surveillance having use cases that transcend what I'll call the traditional models of rules based and having those rules written by a professional services team and getting to the point of being able, these wealth firms can write their own rules. And the AI will help code those rules to really effectively wrap around their businesses.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I see it too, for those who can really define what their need is versus just throwing something up against the wall and seeing what sticks. It's hard work, but it really pays off. The dividends come quickly.
Huge. And I can't tell you how many times like we go out and, we're doing AI or we're doing, you know, we have this, that, and the other thing, but there's not the use case.
Yeah. It's a science fair project.
If I could give any advice to providers, it's lead with use case and benefit versus kind of functionality dump, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, because that's the big differentiator is when a user can envision themselves with the product or with the solution and they say, oh my gosh, that's going to make my life easier, right? I think we can look at the note-taking apps right now, and there's a certain degree of that with meeting summaries and scheduling and things like that, right? So people want to envision making their lives better and easier. And oh yeah, the change isn't torturous.
Yeah. So, you know, the advisor toolkit and the advisor are evolving right now in terms of what they have available, what tools they're using, how they engage with clients, what clients are asking of them, and the services that they provide. There certainly is a trend within kind of the tech side dealing with, you know, and this is a use case, you know, rep is PM. If you think about the IBD world being multi-custodian and having to swivel between different custodial tools or the broker dealers having challenges getting connectivity and being able to enable those advisors to work with those clients wherever they want to be. You know, how are firms managing that rise of technology? How are they dealing with things like compliance and oversight that come with it? And is it proving to be some sort of genuine growth opportunity for them?
It's a good question that there's a lot to unpack there.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned compliance. I've not met too many compliance officers that are in love with rep as PM. Like, you think? Come on, right? And I swear for the last 5 years of our compliance roundtables, we've had this discussion pop up. And they're like, yeah, these our advisors are really, really good at relationship. And that's getting a new customer and servicing mm-hmm. the customer.
Yep.
Yeah, but they're not so good at managing the money, right? And what I see right now are a lot of firms starting to create benchmarks on performance mm-hmm. of here's the average and here's where you are.
Right.
And hey, listen, for those advisors that effectively do rep as PM and can outperform the benchmark that's been chosen, kudos to you. But I would suggest that the majority are below the benchmark. And,
yeah,
I see broker dealers wanting to get them focused on doing what they do best.
Sure. Well, and I think that that historically the research has proved that out. I don't think anybody can really question it. I think that sometimes reps feel like they have some secret sauce that makes a difference. But I think that the big use case maybe right now that's tech enabled is the ability to create those customized portfolios and the implementation activities around them to support very unique and specific needs of individuals.
I agree with you. I think we get into, you know, it's interesting because I've been spending some time with some different firms out there. One of them, we're taking a look at how they've taken a goal approach, right? And aligning that ultimately to picking a portfolio, right?
Sure.
Five questions, Nebo Wealth, five questions, they go out, boom, bing, bang, boom. And based on those five questions, they're able to come up with some goals and align a household, align accounts to do an effective job of that. You know, another, if we take a look and Rob Kirk, I don't know if you're familiar with Rob with Intergen, does an amazing, you know, he's got some amazing data. But he's also been very, very dialed in on AI, right? And how, you know, the ultra high net worth and are using AI to create their, to go out and like create investment strategies.
Sure.
And are these in alignment with what my advisor's doing? Right.
Yep.
And it's becoming more and more prevalent because people are curious.
Yep.
And yeah, that's going to be the offset.
Yeah. 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 I mean, we find it on our side, the portfolio management piece, you know, the ability to use AI to ensure that that portfolio is tracking against the client's IPS, their asset allocation, yep, their risk profile, any sorts of exclusions or restrictions that maybe were just strictly rules-based last time, can now really be interactive, and they can make a meaningful difference in how that advisor is managing and trading those portfolios. I think we often talk about tech, but it's the people that use it that we really have to think about. What have you found to be the single biggest factor that actually drives an individual advisor to change, you know, some of their long-held processes and adopt a new model or tool?
A great question, because change management's really hard.
Yeah.
Right? It's really hard. So what does that mean? Effective education program about what tool the tool does and how it does it. Is the tool easier to use? Right?
Yeah.
Can they make that mental transition of going, all right, by using this, I have these things that give me more time,
yeah,
that push data where I need it to be to do other things. Overall, it's a lot about user experience. It really is. Is it better to use than my previous tool set?
Yeah.
And do I have to go through the damage, the brain damage, to, you know, just end of the day frustration? Do I have it?
Right.
Yes or no?
Yeah. We find, or I've found in my conversations, especially recently, that knowing the audience is really important, and kind of knowing who those people are, right, and then the clients that they serve. Because I can walk in with my tool and it can be as complicated as flying an F-16. Or it can be like driving a Hyundai Sonata. You kind of got to understand who those people are, because if I show up with things that are really complicated, they're like, eh, this isn't for me. I'm not going to use it. But if I show up and I hit the mark and they're like, hey, I just need to do X, Y, and Z, and I make it do X, Y, and Z, they're like, oh, this is the best thing since sliced bread.
We're huge proponents of persona-based training,
yeah,
right? And doing it in incremental steps, right? So what's going to be what are the three things that are going to be easiest to adopt and use? And hey, that gives me value. Well, no, right. Can I do another thing? Can I, and make it iterative over time, sure, not just, hey, here's, you know, here comes the flood, right? That scares people. And, yep, that gets in the way of adoption. And quite frankly, when firms roll out a tech, they really got one shot to do it.
Yeah, they do. The phrase I like to use internally is meet them where they are, right? And that's just so important. So we've spent talking about, you know, the advisor and their toolkit and how they're both evolving. I think there are some firm level imperatives that are really pertinent right now. We started with AI a little bit earlier. Maybe we can come back a little bit to that. Alts, and then this push for change that certainly we're all feeling at this point. So if I zoom out at the firm level, one of the hottest topics clearly is artificial intelligence. We talked about it early on in this, but let's get back to compliance, because you were talking about that in the context of some other questions. How are chief compliance officers, you advise, thinking about the new world of data sensitivity and supervision that comes with AI?
Pandora's box.
Yeah.
Like, quite literally. So we had in February, we brought a group of, I don't know, 20 odd compliance officers together. Mm-hmm. And we did a breakout session, and we did it on AI and AI policy. And back in February, when we were going through AI policy, it was pretty raw, meaning hadn't really been, for many firms, it hasn't been sketched out on the expectations they have. Mm-hmm. I think they're that's fast collapsing in terms of firms saying, hey, we got to have a policy, right? This morning I chatted with a compliance firm, actually, and we're talking about AI policy. And one of the things with our Beacon Provider Network, we're doing an AI policy review, right? So it's super important to have that AI policy, right? So questions that we look at, right, in terms of, you know, for compliance officers, and we're trying to get them curious to ask these of us, but things like, all right, is it a public or private data model? Let's just start with the basics, right?
Right.
Do you have a zero retention policy, or zero data retention policies? These questions about where the investor and the advisor's data is going to end up.
Mm. Yep.
And this is a work in progress for the majority, if not all, of wealth firms right now, because it's so new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I talk to a lot of consultants, and what you've said, I've heard from others, that's probably the best place to start is, what's your policy, right? You've got to get it written down. You've got to understand what you're doing. And most likely you need some help. You know, doing this is not a simple affair, right? If you really want to make the most of it.
No. And it's interesting because we've been doing some work with some different firms out there on, you know, kind of trying to actually find we can create a mainstream policy that mm-hmm. firms can build on.
Sure.
Right. So like Paul Osterberg over at Security Base Camp, like he's doing some really, really neat work in this area. And so when we look at that, there are plenty of others out there as well. So don't just use that one. But these people just need these firms need a policy.
Right.
Let's just start with that, as you just said. And then, you know, in time, I believe that the SEC and FINRA are going to weigh in pretty heavily.
One would think. Pretty heavily. All right. Well, I totally agree with what you're saying. I think another big strategic shift that's happening right now is this push into alternative investments, and that coming downstream, right? And into kind of the more mass affluent marketplaces, and they're politically, you know, we've got a lot of things changing and directives potentially opening up retirement accounts to be able to use some of these things. So what are you seeing as the most significant adoption of alts in the IBD or the RIA space? And what do you see as the biggest hurdle to broader use over the next few years? Is it education, liquidity, or is it technology, or is it some combination?
So great subject, right? So I spent a bunch of time early this year really kind of digging into alts and what firms are doing with alts and the problems, but yet the benefits. If we look at what investors want, they're curious. They want access to alternatives. And that includes, you know, traditional vehicles, real estate, and, mm-hmm. you know, those types of vehicles. It includes, you know, anything. It could be fintech, right? It could be wealth. It could be whatever it may be. Crypto.
Could be.
People are curious about it, right? And, oh, yeah, we have political motivations coming down to grow that, to be able to grow that asset classification. So when we look at it, this is part of doing business now. This is the expectation, is the product shelf is going to be wider to support the investor's broader needs. Now, the advisor may not be attuned or want to go into alternatives, for one. Two, the client, it may not be in the best interest of the client. So let's go back to that. Best interest of the client.
I think that's probably the best thing that you could say, because really that's what it comes down to. Whether you're a fiduciary or it's suitability based, take your pick. But ultimately, you've got to make that determination first. And if it's in their best interest, it's really the onus is on you as the advisor or the firm to be able to provide access to the appropriate set of investments that have been properly screened and whatnot. So I'm with you 100% on what you said. That makes sense.
You know, the other piece of that that I'll add to it is distribution. Okay. Because if we look at a lot of the different providers that are out there, they serve different marketplaces, right? And they may have, right, you know, a different product shelf, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what we see the clearing and custody firms doing, what we see the traditional ICAPs and cases doing, all super interesting. And then the one nobody or most people don't really think about is the back end reporting, right? Which can cause you to have to extend your tax filing.
It can, sure.
You know, the K-1, it's just, it can be an ugly process, right? Yep. And you have the Arches out there that are trying to make it better, and some of the other firms out there that are loading. But when we look at it, pulling all this stuff together to make it easy to work with, that's going to be highly influential. That's going to be an important element as well. Because if it's hard one time for an advisor, they're out. Well, it's hard for a customer, they're out.
Well, yeah. It, having run a few of these platforms, non-alt platforms in the past, the idea of bringing on alts 10 years ago was terrifying.
Right.
Terrifying.
Oil and gas.
It was. It was crazy. So anyways, I love the innovation. I think it's certainly growing. And as I've been talking to some of these other platforms, the innovation that's going to come over the next, you know, 24 months, 36 months, can be pretty significant.
Yep.
If we bring it all together, what's the biggest catalyst you see that forces an entire firm from the C-suite down to finally embrace these kinds of significant and often expensive strategic changes?
I have one word: scale.
Yeah.
Scale. What we find are advisory shops, as they grow, struggle with scale. A lot of them have started at a level of, you know, they didn't have as many clients, right, to serve. Mm-hmm. As they grow, as they acquire, the ability to keep that relationship with the customer or the prospect is harder because you have more clients, more households. So how does a firm scale is how we look at it. And we look at that from every single perspective. That's, you know, from a tech perspective, does your infrastructure, does your tech stack support your strategic goals? Are you able to service the customer and automate enough elements of that, of the journey, to make it a good experience for the customer?
Yeah. No, I hear you. I try to avoid the word scale. I just don't like it, because I think that that's what you're trying to achieve. You're trying to achieve scale, but there are all these underlying concerns, issues, opportunities that are really the things that I think people need to focus on. Because sometimes when somebody comes and says, "Hey, I'm not scaling," I'm like, "Well, what does that mean? You know, tell me about it. What are the things that are keeping you from growing or keeping your advisors from serving more clients?"
But if you look at that, right? Yeah. If you look at that, yeah. And to me, scale's the umbrella, right?
Correct.
But underneath that is, are you able to service your customers the way you service them when they chose you?
Yeah.
As their advisor, right?
There you go.
And that's communication. That's, you know, keeping in the know, so to speak. Mm-hmm. It's being able to be the financial coach that they chose you to be. And that also can incorporate, if somebody just stays in the wealth section of the business and doesn't incorporate risk, and is that good enough today? Is it good enough when they're not taking into account cash flow and banking? And now we see healthcare coming into play, right? Mark Butler put an article out, and Mark Butler kind of hopped on it, but how healthcare is not being adequately framed into kind of the plans for investors.
Yep.
That's a big deal. And we see this transformation of advisors. When I started in the business, it was just wealth and retirement, right?
Yep.
Now they're a financial coach, where that's just one component of the relationship. Mm-hmm. For the best advisors.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that the advisor doesn't necessarily have to know everything, but they need access to the experts to pull them in when they need to. And I see so many opportunities on that front too. We can do a whole session on that.
We could.
Absolutely. Well, Chip, I have to say this has been somewhat of a masterclass in the trends shaping the industry that we're dealing with today. To leave our listeners with kind of one final thought, what is the single most important hot topic that wealth management leaders should be relentlessly focused on for the next 12 months?
That's a big ask, because there are a lot of them. The business has gotten so much more complex in really the last 10 years. The way I look at it is always, I like to look and we like to advise is, what is the service model MVP for a firm?
Yep.
And be able to work around that. To us, that's super important. How do you want to serve your customers, your prospects going forward? And everything kind of works around that.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Really powerful place to end. Chip Kispert from Beacon Strategies, thanks for your time and expertise today. For our listeners, we'll be back in the next couple of weeks with more insights into the world of wealth management. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for listening to In the Money, the show that delivers advisors, asset managers, broker-dealers, and other technology service providers the knowledge they need to navigate this industry. Don't forget to click the follow button to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Flyer Financial Technologies. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only.